Welcome to Risk and Repeat, episode 15. I am Rob Wright, editor of Search Security, and I'm here with my site editor, Peter Loschen. Peter.
Hi, Rob.
Hi. We are in part two of our extensive discussion about the Equation Group and the shadow brokers. And as we've already discussed in part one, I love talking about this. This has got all the elements of like a cyber spy novel. I feel like I'm in a, you know, Neal Stephenson book. So in part one of our discussion, we talked a lot about sort of the basics of the of what we know regarding this, and also sort of speculation about who the Equation Group is and who the shadow brokers are. And I think in this discussion, we want to go a little bit further with what Equation Group is and the implications that it is tied to the NSA, because there are a lot of there's going to be a lot of blowback if this keeps going in the direction that we think it is. But you, Peter, you had an interesting sort of I don't want to say conspiracy theory, but you had a notion about, you know, maybe the motivations behind this leak, why the information was being leaked. And I thought it was worth a mention, and I would like you to put on your tinfoil hat and unleash the Kraken.
Okay, tinfoil hat on, but with the antlers.
Yes.
So a week or so ago, actually last week, Microsoft lost control of the keys for their secure boot feature, and people were saying, this is a really good argument in favor of not ever doing backdoors, because once you lose them, you lose you not only lose control over what you've got, but everything that you had.
Indeed.
And you can't control it, and you can't stop it, and you can't mitigate it or remediate it. So, and that kind of, that story did not make a huge ripple on the, or waves anywhere.
No, because it was, I think because it was limited to like Windows Phone and Windows 8 RT and things
right.
like lesser devices.
Things that nobody uses, which, you know.
Yeah.
Everybody uses Windows, but you know, those were things that people were not really using, so it didn't make a huge impact. And once I got my paranoid conspiracy theorist hat on, I started thinking, well, this is an even bigger argument in favor of not doing backdoors, because when you have the government holding on to these things, and okay, I'm going to say, let's say that this was a one in a million kind of thing, that somehow somebody got in. However they did it, we speculated last time that maybe it was somebody that walked in, you know, or a rogue NSA employee like Snowden, or
disgruntled employee,
disgruntled somebody. But so my ultra conspiracy theorist said, my inner ultra conspiracy theorist says, well,
or outer, because you're talking about it here.
Because now I'm letting it out.
Yeah. You know, let it out, Peter. Release the Kraken. Yeah, go ahead.
Right. So my thought was, well, what if this is somebody who wants us all to understand that in the going dark argument, if we say, let's have backdoors on everything, this is what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Because this was supposed to be super secret. Nobody was supposed to even know about these tools.
Yep.
And they're out. And if you have something that people do know about, like these backdoors that are being proposed for all encryption of all kinds, then how long is that going to take before somebody compromises it? So,
and that's a great point. And so here's something else. Now we sort of operated on the wavelength in the first part of this discussion that the claims that Equation Group is the NSA, those claims are true. Now, the Washington Post had a really good story about this, sort of reviewing how these tools, you know, had been revealed online and sort of the backstory. But they spoke, the reporter spoke with a couple of folks that worked, you know, former NSA personnel who went, you know, on record, you know, obviously anonymously, but talked about how, these files are, they're real, and they're part of the Tailored Access Operations Division at the NSA. And, you know, I'll read you a quick quote from this Washington Post story. A quote from a former TAO employee who spoke on the condition of anonymity. Quote, "The stuff you're talking about would undermine the security of a lot of major governments and corporate networks, both here and abroad." Now, I want to go back to what we talked about in episode one with the level of sophistication that researchers, including the folks at Kaspersky, who first discovered Equation Group, the level of sophistication that is being talked about here. I mean, Kaspersky was very clear. They said they have never seen anything like this, which again led a lot of folks to speculate that it was the U.S. government in some capacity. I'm reminded of a conversation I had years ago with another when I was working at another outlet. I did an interview with the retired general Jack Keane of the U.S. Army, who, for any foreign policy wonks out there, people who read a lot about foreign policy and defense and the Iraq War, he was the sort of the primary force behind the Iraq surge strategy, and is very well respected. And one of the things he spoke at an event that I covered, and one of the things he said was very clearly, in no uncertain terms, he said that he didn't want to call them cyber weapons. He didn't like that term. He said cyber offensive capabilities. And he said, "We have the most formidable cyber offensive capabilities in the world. In fact, no one else is even close to it." And he was very clear about that. And he wouldn't say what, you know. We did an on-camera interview. I'm like, "Come on, General, give me a little insight into this. Are we talking about vulnerabilities? Are we talking about hacking tools? Give me, you know, cyber bombs." Joking about cyber bombs. I hate that term.
Cyber pathogens,
cyber diseases. What are we talking about? Are we talking about AI? Are we talking about Skynet? He wouldn't budge. But he was very clear about this. And other folks within the government had gone on record and said the same thing. Despite the denials that we had anything to do with Stuxnet or other things, or that we hoard zero days, I think it's time to sort of drop the BS and drop the cloak. And so for the purposes of this conversation and all conversations going forward, just operate under the apparent truth that yes, the US government does have cyber offensive capabilities. They do hoard malware, they do hoard zero-day exploits, and they do have cyber weapons that they use to attack foreign governments. They do it to us, we do it to them. So now, looking at what the Equation Group apparently was doing and the stuff that the shadow brokers have disclosed, you're talking about exploits in a number of different major, not foreign products. You're talking about Cisco, F5, major security networking IT vendors in this country that the Equation Group was hoarding. I mean, that's serious. And like you said in part one, Cisco, at least Cisco and F5 have come out and said, yes, these exploits they're real. We have confirmed that they're legit. We are in the process of patching them. We did not know about them. These are exploits that are going back, apparently, according to the files from that released by the shadow brokers, 2013. So what does that tell you, Peter?
It tells me that they're not doing the vulnerability equities process.
No, all that stuff that they talked about recently, and not just recently, but over the years, about how we don't hoard 0 days. Okay, we do hoard 0 days, but not that many. We do disclose them to the vendors. We don't just sit on them for years and years. We want the vendors, we want the technology manufacturers to be able to protect themselves. I mean, it seems like that is just empty rhetoric at this point, because you look at this and so I'll throw something out to you, Peter. So Snowden gets a hold of that information. He leaks that information with some of the code and some of the vulnerabilities tied to the NSA's, for all intents and purposes, hacking division. And that information that was released in 2013 has now been used to sort of corroborate what the shadow brokers have released to tie it back to the NSA. Now, So the NSA knew that they had been breached. Forget about the shadow brokers. They knew they had been breached and exposed by Edward Snowden, and apparently they moved this stuff off the server. But they didn't notify Cisco. They didn't notify the vendors, at least none that we know of so far. These vulnerabilities, they were sitting on them for 3+ years. And they did nothing, even knowing that these could be out in the wild, to help these companies protect themselves.
Well, okay, so there's at least two responses to that. Number one, we didn't disclose because we didn't think that they were, we didn't actually realize that they were breached. We took, you know, they took defensive measures by taking it down after the Snowden breach, but they didn't, they were not aware that this breach happened to them. So that's one option.
They were aware that the
Snowden breach.
They didn't know what documents he took. I mean, they still don't know. So they don't know that he didn't get a hold of those exploits.
Well, if the shadow broker's disclosure material came from somewhere outside of Snowden's area, they might just assume that nothing happened to it.
Sure.
Or they could say, well, we knew, we suspected that they might have been breached, but we've got important national security concerns, so we did not disclose because that would be bad for national security. That's an argument that is often used for why things don't get disclosed, because national security or
but it's na- is it national security? I mean, I'm gonna have a tough time. Like if I'm Chuck Robbins at Cisco, and I find out this week that the NSA had been keeping a collection of 0 days in my products, and essentially making them less secure because the government didn't disclose these catastrophic flaws and vulnerabilities that could be used by hackers, cyber criminals, nation state actors. I mean, I'm livid. I don't know what recourse he or any of the other vendors CEOs have at this point, but I mean, I would be demanding answers. I would be demanding why. I mean, this seemingly goes against the stated policy of the US government to not do this and to work with private corporations to disclose when there are catastrophic vulnerabilities or flaws that could be exploited, and to help them protect their products from bad actors. But in this case, it looks like that's not the case. In this case, it looks like they were just sitting on these things and saying, well, oh, national, we gotta hold on to these. National security. Well, we gotta hold on to them.
In answer to that?
Yes.
Or in response or reply? Yes. Or just sort of related to that. 2014, John Chambers, Cisco CEO, wrote a letter to President Obama,
yes,
asking that the federal government stop spying on the NSA, or the NSA stop spying on Cisco.
Yeah, on Cisco and, yeah.
Right. And that was 2014. So we all, you know, there's things that people are aware of that they don't always talk about. There's things that people talk about, but they don't report as truth. Things that they report on, but say it's speculation. So we've got this whole spectrum of truth, apparently, or disclosures. So where does that leave us? Somebody made the decision either to disclose or not disclose, and somebody continued to make the decision not to disclose over time, and now somebody's, I hope somebody's going to get in trouble for it. I hope not too much trouble.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Yeah. I should just clarify. I think I said F5 and I meant Fortinet networks.
Yes. So. I didn't want to correct you.
No, correct. Correct away.
But yes, Fortinet. Yes. Juniper is another one that Cisco and Fortinet have both admitted and are working on their fixes. Juniper, as of this morning, had not made a response on this. So.
I mean, this is a bad look for those companies. I mean, it's obviously a bad look for the NSA and the government and the White House and their stated policy to, you know, not do this. So if you're Cisco, I mean, the news just came out that they're going to be laying off a few thousand people. They've had, they're on record as saying they've had trouble post-Snowden with sales to foreign governments, foreign companies, because they're afraid now that the NSA has all these, you know, it basically has backdoors into their products, and that Cisco works with them, which Cisco has denied. And but now you have this come out. I mean, this is really bad. This is like, if I'm a company in Europe or Middle East or Pacific Rim in Asia, like, and I'm looking at this and saying, oh, wait a minute, I could go with Cisco. I know that they're, you know, the leader in networking, but how do I know that their stuff is safe if the NSA has been sitting on all these vulnerabilities and we're just hearing about them now, and they didn't let Cisco patch them, and who knows if Cisco really did or didn't know that these were out there. I mean, I have to believe that Cisco is being legit and it's saying, because why would you want this many vulnerabilities out there? And that's horrible. I mean, that would be catastrophic for them. I'm using the word catastrophic a lot in this podcast, but I do feel like the stakes in this discussion warrant that language. I don't know.
So I don't think Cisco's layoffs are related to this.
No. I'm saying this comes at a bad time.
It does.
When they've already sort of said that their revenue has and their image has taken a hit in the past because of, you know, these NSA matters.
Well, and then, you know, if you're Cisco, and a company comes to you and says, "I'd like to buy 5 of your best routers," and does Cisco have to investigate every single one of their customers? Because that's what they're going to have to do to keep their product out of the NSA's hands, as well as the Russian and the Chinese and the Israelis and everybody else who's doing cyber stuff.
Yep,
they're all going to, you know, they all have the dark budget in the U.S. for intelligence is huge.
Yeah,
they can create or buy an existing business and use that as a front to get the material that they need to discover the zero days.
Yep.
And Cisco can't really do anything about it. In fact, if they don't sell to those suspect companies, if they decide that they're going to not sell to those kinds of companies, then they're going to lose revenue from it. And they given the level of tradecraft that the NSA and the CIA and the Russians and everybody else has, I'm sure that it's going to be really hard to figure out which one is legit and which one is a front. So it's a problem, and I think I don't know what the solution is. If I did, I would probably be out implementing it. But how do you handle that? You know, people have thrown accusations around about allegations about companies based in China doing this kind of thing, but and maybe they do. It's entirely possible that covert, but still, you know, people are cooperating. Whereas with Cisco doesn't want to. I'm sure Cisco doesn't want to cooperate with the NSA to break their own products. But at the same time, they got to sell their product.
Yep.
So, yeah, this story is going to, you know, really reverberate for a long time over our industries. I mean, what vendors can you go to that wouldn't be
affected
by this?
I don't know. I mean, if you were the Equation Group, you would be turning over every stone, every router, every switch, every communications app, every encryption algorithm. I mean, at this point, you have to sit back and say everything that we've come to use sort of commonly, you know, sort of pre-2013, if indeed access was cut off to the shadow brokers, that all of that stuff is, number one, it there's some type of vulnerability or compromise, and number two, it's going to be out in the open soon. Because there's no guarantee that the shadow brokers won't turn around and say, okay, we didn't get the million Bitcoin that we wanted, but here's the rest of the stuff. And if what people like Snowden and everybody else is saying is true, that this stuff is all going to be sort of pre-Snowden leak when they, you know, maybe shut down some stuff and move and re-secure their infrastructure because of Snowden's leaks, then that's still bad. I mean, even like looking at the Fortinet and the Cisco stuff. I mean, obviously, these flaws don't affect some of the more recent software versions, firmware versions. But you and I know that these people, the enterprise customers, don't always update their stuff, and that they're still running, you know, firmware, software, applications, et cetera, from 2013. So,
well, here's another thought. If I'm a Russian spy agency and I've got this big pile of really, really juicy exploits and tools, and I've been using them for the last 3 years, or I've been looking at them or analyzing them or whatever I'm doing with them, protecting them from being disclosed to anybody outside of my agency, but also using them for in whatever way. Maybe I'm using them to keep track of what the NSA or the Equation Group is doing.
Yeah,
that's fine. It's 3 years. There's a lot of new equipment. The equipment does turn over. So the value of a zero day in 2013,
yep,
now is probably less. And if I'm the director of the spy agency or the current shadow broker, or whoever I am, if I'm the one who's managing this, and I say to myself, well, I've been using this stuff for 3 years, I've got a really great opportunity now to send a message,
yep,
to really mess things up for people that I want to mess things up for,
right,
to like tilt over an election, maybe to throw everyone into disarray, to throw the
sure.
High tech is a big driver of the economy, and has been for a long time. You know, if Cisco and Fortinet and Juniper and on and on and on,
right,
they all take a hit, the whole economy is going to take a hit. So these are all things
that's terrifying.
I have to, and at the same time, I've been accumulating more zero days. I've been accumulating more intelligence. I've been accumulating more exploits on my own,
yeah,
or from other sources in the last 3 years. So now the value of this old batch that I've been sitting on top of and protecting for 3 years, the value of that and the action I can get from dumping it right now is so high that it's worth it to me to say, okay, I'm done with this set.
Yeah.
But meanwhile, there's probably stuff, there's all kind, you know, we talk about the high-end enterprise level, you know, the super duper Cisco stuff. At the same time, a lot of exploits and a lot of attacks are going to be done on people through the Starbucks Wi-Fi network.
Oh, sure.
Or through their home network that they think is all up to date, but maybe they, you know, there's a lot of different vectors, and this is one particular vector that the shadow brokers have decided it's time to make it public because of the big splash they're going to get out.
Yeah.
And
yeah, it's, I mean, there's implications for elections, but let's just look at the implications for the market. Like, do you think we might see some of these vendors say, like, demand a congressional hearing, for example, about what is going on here? And I mean, do they have that right? Can they do that? Are they going to get any answers? Will there be any political pressure from people in Congress? I mean, obviously, there's a number of folks in Congress who are they're pro encryption, pro, you know, security, very committed to proper practices and not doing this type of stuff. But is that going to be enough for these vendors to get real answers and a real policy change that prevents something like this from happening?
Well, I mean, we do live in the United States, where the Constitution gives us the right to redress for our grievances.
Sure.
And, you know, so yeah, they have the right to ask for that. Unfortunately, I think the atmosphere in Washington is such that there's somebody's going to. It's too easy for things to get turned into partisan fights, and And I'm not sure that everybody who's involved in those things, as we've seen from the going dark argument, debate, so-called debate,
yeah,
air quotes, the going dark situation, we've got people that clearly, from the, what they say in public, either they're oversimplifying on purpose or they just don't understand.
They just don't understand, yeah.
And that's a, you know, and we, and even the people that we, that were at first for back doors, I want to say Mitch McConnell, was he the one? One of those people actually backpedaled, if I recall correctly, not very publicly and not loudly, but a little bit. But yeah, when asked about it, the response was, "Well, it's complicated," as opposed to, "We have to have access to all encrypted data."
Yeah.
So that shows some progress, but I think still we've got a lot of, you know, Congress is gridlocked anyway.
Yeah.
And people are going to start throwing accusations around. It's not going to be pretty.
And we've seen that, you know, you can justify a lot of bad policy and bad strategy and bad laws in the name of sort of national security and sort of evoking fear of, you know, cyber attacks from Russia and China. And so who knows if that's going to happen. But, I mean, it's important to note, though, that, you know, like going back to that Washington Post story that discussed, you know, that had a former NSA personnel discussing, you know, the connections here between the hacking tools that were divulged and the vulnerabilities and what the NSA has. So thus, connecting Equation Group to the NSA. It's important to note that at least one of the sources said that there were, just within the NSA and the Tailored Access Organization, the source said that, told the Washington Post, there were hundreds of zero-day flaws and not a single one of them was disclosed to a vendor. Now, if we find out, okay, that this that it's literally hundreds and it affects a wide swath of the IT industry, I think these companies can get together, they can sit down, they can demand answers, and they can demand policy change, because good God, I mean, that is, if someone were to get a hold of all of that stuff and just release it, that would be devastating. Let's pretend for a minute that this isn't just stuff from 2013, but somebody gets on an NSA staging server that's 2016 up to date and starts hoarding all the 0 days that the NSA and other government agencies have collected. That's going to be, I hate saying it, but that's going to be even more catastrophic. You know, I love that word today. And we should note too, Peter, that we had a story recently that talked about, I think it was a DEF CON presentation. I think this was in Mike's news roundup from last week. There was a researcher from Columbia University who talked about at DEF CON research that he did, an investigation into the NSA's stockpile of 0 day vulnerabilities. And it's interesting because Jason, the researcher's name is Jason Healy. He said that it was probably only a few dozen 0 days, maybe around 50. And the new vulnerabilities collected each year were probably in the single digits. And he talked a little bit about the methodology he used to determine this. And I don't think the paper, the research paper is online yet. But so look at that last week and then look at this, the findings that we have this week. And there seems to be a pretty wide gulf in what's going on. And not only the 0 days and the vulnerabilities, but, like, you know, this was talked a lot about on Twitter, but the Apple stuff, iOS, you know, the government, we had a sitting judge demand that Apple come up with a hacking tool to break its own product, its own sort of passcode protection, to get into a device that was owned, or not owned, it was a government employee, government-owned device of the San Bernardino shooter. And you remember what did the government say when Apple said, we don't want to do this, we don't want to risk getting it out in the open.
We won't let it out in the open. We're the government. Trust us.
We're the government. Trust us. And now, right. Now they can't even keep stuff, like their own homegrown hacking tools under wraps. I mean, that's terrifying. And I think now any company in Apple's position, if there are future sort of discussions about this type of stuff, if another ill-informed judge comes forward and tries to offer up this as a solution to getting around someone's, you know, security, all they're going to have to do is point to this alleged shadow broker's Equation Group business and say, no way. And who in their right mind is going to say, oh, don't, no, you got to trust the government.
Well, okay, the government has not acknowledged that the Equation Group is part of the NSA.
Sure.
And the NSA is not saying anything.
Well, they're never going to say anything.
They're never going to say anything. But the thought just occurred to me, you know what is really going to mix things up is if somebody comes back and says, hey, remember that OPM thing, the Office of Personnel Management?
Yep.
They got the people that got in using one of these 0 days, or five of them.
I love that.
I mean, how messed up will that be?
That is going to be, oh my God, I'm almost wishing for that. I mean, I know it would be bad, but I'm almost, and who knows, they probably wouldn't even need, you know, sort of an unknown 0 day to get into the OPM. I mean, from the accounts that we've read in from government, you know, hearings on this, maybe they didn't need. But if they did, oh, can you imagine the heads that would roll for that?
Literally.
Well, I mean, this isn't Game of Thrones, but yeah, I mean, I take your point. Yeah, that would be bad. I mean, maybe that's where this is going. Maybe as more information is released, we're going to be faced with not just sort of security market, security industry, IT industry sort of implications and effects and blowback to this, but also within the government, and not just from a policy perspective, but from a personnel perspective. Who knows? I mean, this is such a great story. I could talk for hours about that, but
we have
talked for an hour, but. Collectively over two parts, but I guess we should probably wrap it up. I need to edit this stuff.
Yeah. We do. But,
well,
but yes, it is. We're probably going to talk about this some more. I'm guessing.
Yeah. This story ain't going anywhere. Well, Peter, thank you for bringing some conspiracy theories and some excellent insight into this discussion and debate, I guess. And always a pleasure to have you here sitting by my side to keep me calm, cool, and collected.
Always a pleasure to be here.
Thank you, Peter. And once again, I'm Rob Wright with Search Security. Thank you for listening to this episode of Search Security's Risk and Repeat podcast, and we will see you next time.